You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Point Tavern along Riverside Drive for another edition of the Massive Report podcast. Boy, we got a full house again here. We got Mike, we got Patrick, we got Ori, we got Alex, Ralph, a Ralph sighting. No one gave Ralph a microphone, though, Sam. Sam's in charge. He's running everything. He doesn't have a microphone either, so I don't know how we're going to hear from you guys. I had several questions. Well, we'll have to figure that out. Columbus won, Seattle won on Saturday night, a game that, by all opinions, I think we should have won, but that's kind of how this beautiful game works sometimes. You don't always get all the justice you want, but I thought the lads played very well in a place that traditionally is a tough place to get a result. So I'll take it. VAR did us well and then did us in. But I think they got the calls right. We'll go over all that. Where do we start? Do we start with the goal? Another classic Luis Diaz service to Jossie Zardes.
Yeah, I mean, it was as picture perfect of a pass as you could ever see. I mean, it was on point, and also good job on Zardes to finish that. I mean, look, we've seen him and others miss those, but Diaz laid a ball perfectly. You know, in terms of the game itself, I thought the crew defensively did a job of bend but don't break too much, right? And it's really a shame, and we'll get into all the details, of course, but that room save gets taken back. Because that was so beautiful. That was a beautiful save.
It sure was.
You can't cheat. Except he did on the goal.
Yeah, right.
Too,
yeah.
So apparently you can't cheat.
Penalty kicks this year are going to be rougher on goalkeepers. They're really cracking down on feet on the line. And we've all seen the guys do the dance.
Right.
And they're not going to let them do that. They want goals.
And we saw it a million times happen at the Women's World Cup last summer. And I think there were maybe like 7 or 8 penalties that were retaken after improper dives.
Just hate that. I feel like you should be allowed to do a little bit of a stutter step off that line. I don't know.
I think you have to have at least 1 foot on the line, but if you have both feet jump off the line at the same time, they're going to always call it back.
If they're going to call that as tightly, then they need to call the run-ups better. Because you have to, according to the rule, unless they've changed it since the last time I read about penalty kick rules, you're supposed to be one continuous motion, and you can't stop, and you're not supposed to be able to slow down. And guys do it all the time.
I agree with that completely.
So if you're going to, you know, call it both ways and whatnot, but I think, you know, with Room, it was pretty clear, right? I mean, he was both feet off the line. It definitely helps a goalkeeper being able to do that. But then he did it again on the second one.
Sure. Yeah. He got that one.
It wasn't quite as bad on the second one, which is probably why, and also it went in. But, you know, it is unfortunate because he does make the save, and they played so well defensively.
Absolutely.
You know, I thought it was a big carryover of what was a pretty good defensive performance against New York City. Now, New York City didn't, you know, test them a ton because being down a man and, you know, bunkering and whatnot. Seattle obviously had some more chances, you know, created more, but I thought they handled it really well, and this is without Vitor Wormhoor out there. You know, Abubakar Keita had to step in and, you know, battle alongside Jonathan Mensah. A good plan by the crew, too. You know, they pressed high. They tried to win the ball back as much as possible to limit Seattle's, you know, build out of the back. And really, for the most part, limited Jordan Morris, which I know is a big thing they were focusing on last week. So I think, you know, game plan wise, they did what they wanted. They were able to get the first goal and play solid defensively. It's unfortunate you give up a penalty kick, and we can discuss that one because Andrew Wiebe in his breakdown of right or wrong calls made a valid point that maybe that shouldn't have been given.
See, I was going to ask because it's so subjective. I can see the arm going out.
Yeah.
But I feel like you guys have a better feel for that sort of thing than I do. Does anyone – I mean, we can go around the room. Do you agree or disagree with the call? It's pretty simple.
I thought it was fair.
Yeah.
I did. I mean,
okay.
Just get your arms behind your back, and then that'll help limit that.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what you were saying, Murph, I thought, you know, with defensively, the biggest thing was when the crew would get 8 players behind the ball, you could see Seattle was very – disjointed, uncertain on what to do, The only times they really created those chances when we would push too high, and then we'd only have, you know, four or five people behind the ball. But, man, when we were kind of parking the bus, which we really weren't parking the bus like you might see, but we were just being very adamant about making sure we had everybody behind, they looked stifled, Seattle. They had no idea what to do, you know, especially in the first half. I thought they made some good second-half adjustments. But anyway, to go back to it, I thought it was a fair call. Just don't put yourself in that situation. Yeah. Get your arms behind your back.
Yeah, it's got to be – if your arm is out, it has to be kind of in a natural position. And he had time to pull that arm back if he really wanted to.
It was sloppy, basically. Yeah. That's what I thought, too.
I think he did it on purpose. I think he,
You think so?
I think he tried to make himself big, well, or at least didn't tuck it back on purpose.
I felt like in that position you don't really need to do that.
No, he definitely didn't need to do that. And the argument that Wiebe made, and for the record, I would have called it a penalty kick too, but the argument that he made, and he used the letter of the law, so to speak, is, and this is, I imagine, a newer rule because I hadn't heard this before, but if it deflects off a part of your body because it clips his knee and stings his arm, you know, that's where he was saying it was a little iffy. Now, he does still make himself a little bit bigger. With the arm out. So, like I said, I would have given it. I don't think there was much of an argument, really. Obviously players argue, but it wasn't like the crew were adamant that that was the wrong call or anything. It would have been interesting if it had gone to VAR just because of that rule. But
that's a good point. It wasn't even looked at.
Yeah, that's the thing that they need to work on with VAR is they have to be more consistent with when it is used, because there are so many instances where something that should have been a penalty was never even looked at, and something that is a penalty, they don't even take a second look just to make sure. Like, so you have to have consistency with it.
Yeah, there's that play in the first half. With, was it Artur?
Wasn't Santos fouled in the box?
Santos, that's what it was. Yeah, and you know they don't give that one, and that was the more questionable call to me, because I thought, you know, that was a pretty clear penalty if you go back and look at it on VAR, and you know, like you said, Ori, when do you do it? When do you not?
I don't think they know.
They don't.
Exactly.
Because they really haven't trained with it very much. Like, yes, when the Men's World Cup happened, they said they practiced with it. And the thing that's kind of nuts is that the Men's World Cup 2 summers ago, that was probably the most effective VAR was. Yes, there were a couple of weird calls here and there. Then at the Women's World Cup, the officials just were not good with it at all. There were a lot of missed calls. And then once it was implemented into the Premier League, I mean, we got, like, people's pinkies are offside and they're calling stuff back.
Absolutely.
And all this other stuff. Yeah. And the thing that drives me crazy about VAR, the calls that they use it for, most of them can be deemed subjective. But when you have something as simple and objective as when a ball goes out of bounds to figure out if it's a throw-in or a corner, and a lot of the times refs miss those calls and linesmen miss those calls, they don't even look at it.
Yeah.
And it's such an easy thing to look at. It takes 5 seconds.
Well, speaking of VAR, Seattle gets a goal wiped off by offsides.
Yes.
Was that the correct call, too? I thought it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was fairly close, I guess.
His whole body was almost offside.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't that close.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I kind of go back and forth in terms of offsides. Sometimes I want to give, just meaning if I could change the rules, I want to give the forward a little bit of a break because of what
like
you're talking about, Ward. Right.
There had to be, like, daylight. And,
right.
You know, they've actually adjusted the rules a little bit since all this ridiculousness in the Premier League's been going on with offside.
Yeah, I mean, there's some – I don't follow the Premier League all that closely, but I saw a play a while back. It was, like, a guy's heel or something.
Yeah,
like
heel,
it was so
pinky,
bizarre. It's like, come
nose,
on, what are we doing?
Yeah.
That's not the spirit of the rule. And, you know, but I thought in the case of the goal that was wiped out, I thought about it for a second, like, well, in my mind, I'm like, maybe we should give them a little more clearance, meaning all forwards, but by the letter of the law, as we know it today, yes, that's offside.
Well, that's the conflict. It's the letter of the law versus
the spirit
of the game, and I think that's what they're having a difficult time balancing.
Yeah.
They don't want goals taken off the board, especially the home team. I mean, they want the ball in the back of the net. That's what the fans pay to see.
Well, in Salt Lake, I don't know if you guys saw that over the weekend, Salt Lake and the Red Bulls, they had a header. Guy has his arms out, you know, for balance. He heads it. It hits off his own hand and goes in. They go to VAR and wipe it out.
And then he scored on – well, not him, but they scored almost the
same
goal.
Same goal, yeah. Uh-huh.
See, a situation like that I agree with, but there's been times where in the buildup, like 2 or 3 passes before a goal, it might hit right here, and the arm is like – tucked in and not in a natural position, and they'll take off the goal.
I just think in general with VAR, I'm not sure that there's enough benefit to make up for the fact that it takes time and you have to stop play and all this stuff.
Well, they don't use it for everything, like Ori was saying.
Yeah. Like, I feel like in leagues where you have super talented referees, getting a second look, it makes it really clear, and then they can make the right call. I'm not sure that we're necessarily even getting better calls with VAR. I feel like we're just slowing stuff down for them to kind of flip a coin and try to take a second look at it.
I think it's a combination of slowing stuff down, which kills tempo, and there are more things that are getting called that would just not get called in the first place, like penalties and all that. Look how many penalties there were at the last World Cups.
Specifically, though, in this match, I felt like they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
They kept it moving. They got the calls right, I think. And in the end, one team benefits, another team benefits. So 1-1 draw is where we're sitting. You guys mentioned defensively we played so well. Obviously, we wanted to see Vito play. I felt like Mensah was the man of the match for me. I mean, I was putting notes into my phone, and most of them pertain to him. I think that's the best match I've ever seen him play, and when we've seen him play well. But he's grown into this guy that you see him in the starting 11, you go, good, that's what I want to see. And then we'll go from there. He's so sound, you know, and without his running mate on Saturday night, and Bubba did a good job, you could see where, you know, he still needs some experience, but Jonathan was so awesome on Saturday.
And people forget, when we signed him, it was always kind of like, oh, God, you know, there were a lot of dumb mistakes that we were making defensively, and he was liable for a lot of goals, but he has become an incredibly solid player. I think this kind of goes back to this whole point that, you know, we've made on a number of times on the podcast over the years, which is, you know, playing in Major League Soccer is weird. You know, you're playing on these turf surfaces that guys have never played on ever in their entire life. You have, you know, all kinds of people from all kinds of different countries playing together. It's just a different thing than some of these domestic leagues that some of these players are used to. And it takes some
travel,
time.
I mean, yeah. That's something that people don't
The various think. Climates and weather.
Yeah.
America has been the quote-unquote melting pot, and MLS is the melting pot of professional soccer.
Yeah.
You're right. You are right. And I think that's something that we often forget. But when you take the long view, if you step back and you look at the rosters and you look where all these guys are from, you know, my wife and I, in the first game, we were marveling at the fact that most of the starting 11 were from other places, you know? Yeah. And it just speaks to the international nature of MLS, which you keep adding teams, you got to comb the world for talent, you know? So it's only going to become more prevalent. And I think you're right. I think it is a factor where these guys do have to learn not only how to play together, but how to play this style.
Yep.
Right.
What is it about MLS that's different from other leagues, do you think? Is there one, two, three things that players have to adjust to? Is it the physicality, or point at a few things?
I think right now it's still in that physical level. I mean, 10 years ago it was more of a brute kind of game. I mean, if you remember back in the day with guys like Matt Camasco, I mean, there's no way guys like that would see playing time anymore, right? So it's not as physical and as just brute strength as it once was. But also I think one of the biggest thing is, and we've talked about this before, but all the various mechanisms in terms of finances, you know, which makes a big disparity in play. You don't necessarily get that in the Italian Serie A or the Premier League or the Bundesliga or anything like that. You have players that are pretty much on par with one another.
Good point.
Here it could be a big disparity. And then, of course, all the other stuff that we just mentioned, the travel. And, you know, most teams travel – most of their games are commercial when they – as opposed to most, if you're in England, you might take a bus ride or, you know, I mean. So it really does take some time for players to adjust.
Well, and I think, too, with, you know, you think about, like, the Italian league, and it's a lot, you know, it's a slower league. You've seen guys, especially older guys, have success there. You think about the Premier League, it's more physical. You know, these leagues all kind of, and not every team fits into that, not every player, but they kind of all have their styles of play, so to speak. Spanish league, you think it's a little bit more technical. With MLS, it's not, you know, there's no one specific. So you bring a guy over, you know, obviously your individual team wants to play a certain way, but, you know, you a guy comes over, maybe he doesn't work out with one team, ends up on another, and, you know, so things like that. I think it certainly makes it more difficult for a player to adjust.
Well, and I think one of the things that makes Major League Soccer unique is in a lot of other leagues, you can point to something and say, oh, that's a league with older, slow players who are incredibly technical. Or you can say, this league, there are a lot of younger, faster players who are really physical. Major League Soccer, it's a total hodgepodge of the people.
It's a jumble.
You have teams just going out and being like, that guy's good at soccer, let's sign him, without any real thought of how that particular player is going to fit in the broader league ecosystem. And so you've got some teams like Atlanta who have all these super technical players, and then you got other teams that are really physical, and you have to play against both in this league, whereas other leagues you kind of know what you're getting and you can tailor your team to that.
Well, and that's a good point. You talked about how we were prepared to play Seattle a certain way, and I guess you can't. It's almost like football, where you have to game plan differently every week, especially college football, because you face these exotic, weird offenses. So you're going to game plan differently. So perhaps, as far as we're concerned, it's hard to draw solid conclusions from especially how we play defensively from one game to the next, because we have to adjust so much tactically. But for that match, and, you know, when we face them in MLS Cup next the end of the year, you know, we know how we want to play.
At Columbus, though. It'll be at Columbus.
Of course. Of course.
And I think that, you know, you look across the league and the results. You know, we talk about parity a lot, and I think that's a lot of what we're touching on is why there's so much parity. And, you know, yes, you have a team like LAFC last year that kind of ran away with things from time to time. But for the most part, you know, there's not a – I mean
– they didn't win. They did not win the hardware, though.
For as poor as the Crew were last year, would they finish 7 points out of the playoffs?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're still close enough that, you know, maybe a couple more games go right earlier in the year. You go on that run the second half of the season, and maybe you're in the playoffs and you're playing well and whatnot. So I think with the, you know, it's so hard to predict, especially on the road.
Yeah.
Things like that. That's what makes this league interesting, but also difficult.
Like, that's the one thing I really think of when I'm thinking, like, MLS versus, like, a Premier League or a Bundesliga. When I look at the weekend slate in England or Spain or Germany, I have a good idea of what the scores are going to be and what the results are going to be. When Liverpool's playing Bournemouth, I have a good idea that Liverpool's probably going to win.
3-0 Bournemouth.
Yeah, there you go. Or when Liverpool loses to Watford
3-0. Yeah, Watford?
But, like, in the Premier League and the Bundesliga, you rarely see those upsets. You look at an MLS week two or week one schedule, you just see some of these results and you're like, this could happen any week. You know, LAFC 3-3 tie against Philadelphia Union. I mean, some people will probably think, oh, LAFC probably would win that very comfortably. But no, it was a crazy, crazy game. So when you look at week by week, match by match, you really don't know what the results are going
to
be.
Well, we talked about on a couple of podcasts last year. Could you imagine trying to make a living betting on Major League Soccer?
maybe we should have a game picking contest.
I would
season
love that. That would be
for,
so fun.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, let's set that up. And maybe for next week's podcast, and we don't have to do the entire slate, but maybe pick 5 games.
Yeah.
And we see. We keep doing it and see who's best at picking.
Everybody's going to be 500. That's just how it's going
to
go.
I mean, is Minnesota good? Somehow we don't know. Ralph's we'll get to win. That. We'll get to that. We'll look back at weekend slate.
Back to Jonathan real quick. I think that as we are discussing how he's started to fit in and play as, you know, a more solid center back, you've seen the responsibility increase, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's captain this year. Yep. You know, even before Caleb got here, Greg was trusting him more. And Greg's thing was always, you know, hey, we believe in this guy. Like, it's going to take time. You know, we're willing to go through the bumps in the road. And I think as he's kind of earned that, you're starting to see the player that they saw, the leadership. You know, I noticed in the first home game how much more he talks than he used to. I mean, back when Zach was the goalie, there was almost no communication unless Josh Williams was playing center back. Like, Zach ran everything along the back line. Now Jonathan's yelling at guys, pointing stuff out. You know, I think Vito does that naturally too, it looked like. But that was something I really noticed from the first game and something you didn't see a few years ago. And that comes with that comfort and playing well too. I mean, he's confident in himself.
Yeah, I think, maybe some players need to be more verbal. They need to be able to lead to play better. And maybe that's true of him.
And when you put that on him, hey, you're the captain. Yeah. You've got to step up and lead this group. you know, now he knows he has that responsibility as opposed to just being one of the guys.
Yeah, and some people forget the competitive advantage it can give you when you're communicating. You need your goalkeeper and your center and your top center back to be on the same page yelling at your defense and your midfield constantly.
Absolutely. Hey, absolutely.
Brian, one more quick thing. You were talking about the hodgepodge of players. Also, think about the coaches in our league. I mean, we have a vast variety of coaches, different styles, different backgrounds. I think that also makes it to where the league's very difficult to play and game plan for.
And if you coach in Cincinnati, you just kind of come and go, and, you know, there's a new guy every week. The top team of the week included Artur. I thought Mensah should have been as well, but I got no argument with that. Here's another guy who is starting to really flourish. I think, you know, the changes that we made, he's probably benefited from the most. What'd you see in his game, guys, in Seattle that you liked?
Well, we talked about this, I think, in one of the preseason shows, what a big few months this is going to be for Artur, because if he can show, you know Darlington Nagbe's going to be in there when healthy, and if Artur can show that he can be that guy alongside him, then maybe they don't need to go sign another piece in the summer, you know, maybe a depth piece if they're not feeling 100% confident in Berhalter and Morris, but, you know, through two games, I think Artur is, you know, making that case. Now, you know, he has to continue to do that, but led the team in tackles, was effective passing the ball, was part of, I think he got a secondary assist on that goal. You know, this is what you want out of a center midfielder, especially playing alongside a guy like Nagbe. The chemistry that they're developing, I think, has come along a lot quicker than I expected. You know, I thought this may take a little bit of time. You know, Nagbe does a lot of very specific things, and Artur has to kind of work off that. He'd been so used to working with Will, but he's been very good these first two games, and a big reason I think they've been able to control some stuff in the midfield.
One of the things I've noticed.
Oh, hey, Ralph.
Hey,
hi, Ralph.
I've emerged from the shadows. Hello. One of the things I've noticed, and I'm sure we all can attest to this, is that Artur's willingness to get up into the final third of the pitch, which last year didn't seem like that was something that we saw a ton of. I don't know if there's more of a trust with Darlington Nagbe. Nagbe, once again, I think it needs to be said, was absolutely on fire this game.
Absolutely.
Several of the major MLS pundits were praising him for his pass accuracy. I think if you guys go back and you dig on my Twitter, I've put that pass map up for the first half. But, he was obscenely good. And, you know,
he's at like 95% for the season.
Yeah, and I'm going to go out there, and I can hear people opening up their phones right now. I'm going to say it right now. Darlington Nagbe, 2 weeks into his crew career, is better than Will Trapp was his entire time here in Columbus. So go ahead. Tweet
interesting
me.
Interesting take.
It's okay.
Alf, it was really great having you on the podcast this season.
You've
made a tremendous contribution this season, and I can't wait for you to return in 2021.
We're going to sell you for $100,000 in GAM.
I will say that for Artur, this has been the best thing for his career, at least two games in. He is more engaged. I think he's been encouraged to be more a part of the attack, and I think he feels free to do so. I think in past years we saw glimpses of good stuff, but he always seemed to be trying to find his role, and I feel like now he understands what it is.
Well, and remember when they signed him. You know, you're coming into that season, you'd signed Mohamed Abu, and you thought that was going to be the guy to kind of replace Tony Chani, obviously a very different player. And then they go to Brazil, they see Artur, a guy that they'd already expressed some interest in, I believe, but they bring him in. Mohamed Abu barely sees the field that season because of what Artur is able to do. Then the start of the next season, he breaks his arm.
Right.
And I always felt like that was where things, you know, I don't know if it's because he missed time or he was just tentative, what it was, but I felt like you didn't see the same player that you saw that first season.
That's a good point.
Because, I mean, we talked on here, there were other people talking about it back then, that first year, that this is a guy who could be here for a few years and they could sell him for, you know, to one of the top European leagues and make some serious money off him with the way he was playing. So, you know, maybe it's just taken him some time. You know, a great kid, you know, learned English faster than I've ever seen a player learn English, just really dove into the culture here. He's gotten married to a girl he met in Columbus. And, yeah. But
I told him at the COSI event, I said, how's your arm? Because I almost barfed when I saw you break your arm. And he just kind of laughed. It was a pretty ugly injury. And he played with the splint all that year and the next year. So I just think that he's definitely rounding into form.
To that point a little bit, Murph, almost feels like Artur is returning back to the form that he was in year one, where he wasn't afraid to go forward. And it almost seems like there's an unsaid chemistry between Nagby and Artur that, you know, if Artur goes forward, Nagby kind of looks at him and goes, yeah, I got this, you know, and vice versa if Nagby goes forward, which we haven't seen too much of, but it looks to be the times that it does happen, the case that those two are very cohesive. And likewise, too, I think you could even say another line back with Vito and Mensa. I think those two have got tremendous chemistry. But again, it's week two. Let's not get too crazy at all or crown any champions yet.
Well, no, but I do think it's encouraging because the season is so long and you've got all these new faces that at least early on they seem to be connecting together in the ways that you want to see. My biggest concern the other night, and Ori, you wrote on MassiveReport.com about Milton Valenzuela. I had a little freak out. I scared the cats a few times watching the game. And my wife is like, shh, scaring the cats. Milton is down.
Right.
This is not good. I freaked out, okay? Where are we on this? How much do we know? It seems like we don't know a whole lot.
We don't know a whole lot yet. I am assuming Pat will find out a lot more in the coming days as he goes to practices and whatnot and figures out everything. But who knows? We might not figure out too much about it, but I thought it was a good precautionary measure just to take him out. You know, it's a turf field. You don't want to risk anything. You just tore his ACL kind of thing.
Well, he did get up, and he did continue. But then my mind goes back to Pipa last year.
Yeah.
Who tears up his knee and then continues to play against Colorado in his final appearance, as it turns out, for the club.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping he's okay. I would have liked to have seen them remove him immediately.
Yeah.
I'm sure he talked his way to stay in the
right.
game. The good news is, though, is that I have a lot of confidence in Chris Cadden. He's athletic, he's experienced, and I feel good about him being on the field. So I don't feel like we lose a whole lot, but Milton is such an important part of this team that we hope that they'll be cautious as need be.
Yeah, we don't want to start having to dive into our depth in week two or three.
No, we don't want to repeat last year.
And especially with him, you know, because we saw even in the first – game and a half what he can bring this season compared to what we didn't get last year. Mm-hmm. So to lose him would be terrible.
So, but that's something Pat and I actually discussed before we all got here and started recording. Losing Valenzuela would be terrible, and obviously we don't want to lose him. He needs to stay in the team, but it wouldn't be as catastrophic of a loss as it was last year now that you have Cadden to step in. And he had a couple of moments where I think his decision-making could have improved against Seattle in that second half. I can remember one instance midway through where he had open field when he just had a deflected ball come by him, and instead of just taking a touch, slowing things down, getting it upfield, he just cleared it out for a throw-in, getting closer to the goal.
Thank you for bringing that up. I noticed that happened like four or five times
during the game.
And I was like, what is happening? What is it? This is like eighth grade.
Yeah.
When you just go, oh my God, the ball, let's kick it out so we don't have to defend. It was just bizarre.
And that's the biggest takeaway I had from the game. That was the one thing that I'm like, this is probably the worst part of the Cruz game against Seattle was the decision making. Defensively, you had a lot of those moments where guys just literally booted it outfield instead of taking a look at the space. And then offensively, you know, when Mukhtar had that run late and had that bad through ball coming in, even though he had acres of space to either take a shot, take another touch, cut it back. I think Zardes as well. I remember you tweeted this, Pat, towards the late game. He had a breakaway one-on-one instead of just doing a little,
right.
You know,
pull
to the other direction.
Or,
yeah, pirouette or a roulette to just take it back and shoot it to that right side. Instead, he just takes a left-footed shot, goes straight at the keeper. Zellerian had a couple of those moments too. Jordan Angeli mentioned one time Zellerian had a set midfield to just dribble and dribble and dribble. And instead, three defenders around Zardes. He tries for that through ball.
It was a great ball.
Yeah.
It was a great ball.
It was all right. But like I remember, my dad said, why doesn't he keep dribbling? Then
yeah, he
should have
kept dribbling.
2 seconds later, why doesn't he keep dribbling? And then Jordan Angeli said, why doesn't he keep dribbling?
I put that in my phone as one of my notes, and I'm glad you brought that up. I want him to be way more selfish. Way more selfish. He's, for whatever reason, and I think it's pretty common, you know, you're trying to fit in with a new team. You don't want to be the guy – that
no, be that guy.
But
that's
we want him to be that guy. We want him to be a James Harden. Shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. And this is a common mistake, I think, when, again, you have so many new faces. They're still learning each other. But the thing that certainly, as the most skilled player on the field, he needs to shoot the ball more. And that's, you know, we saw a lot of poor passes in the attacking third. That was where it was frustrating. I felt like our buildup was good in a lot of spaces, but that final pass, for the most part, other than Lucas on the assist, it just wasn't there. And that's something we'll clean up.
Yeah, and I think it'll come over time. One thing I'd like to see, I'd like to see Nagby get more involved offensively. And again, as we've talked about, his role isn't necessarily to be a setup guy or anything of that nature. But I do think part of his strength is being able to be that unpredictable player with the ball at his feet. And I would love him to either find the ball or for the crew, his teammates, to get him the ball.
Yeah, and if anybody had the best decision-making going in that Seattle game, I would probably say Nagby was. There were a lot of times where there were two defenders around him, turn around just to slow things down, get that space, and find that open man. And that's something. Decision-making mentality is so important to being a successful soccer player, because if you can make those quick decisions on the dot, you see space and you decide to dribble rather than just panic and just go for a through ball, or you're defending and you just panic and just launch it out of bounds. Making those decisions is the difference between good and great players.
Well, and I think that's what Nagby brings, is that he sees the game very well. I mean, that's when you watch him as a guy in your own club, then you get it. You know, this guy is a man who really sees what's going on in front of him, and definitely need that in that position. All right, so a 1-1 tie. We'll look at the match with Real Salt Lake, which kicks off at 5 o'clock, and a different start time for the crew on Saturday night at Moffrey Stadium. Preview that, take a trip around the league, see if Minnesota's for real or not, for instance. We'll do that, all that, here on the Massive Report from the Point Tavern after this break. Welcome back to the Mass Report podcast here at the Point Tavern. Real quick, before we get into a preview of Real Salt Lake, a couple of loan outs, players that we haven't seen this year going and playing at a lower level. Patrick?
Yeah, John Kempen is, and I think a lot of people already knew this, for him at least, because he's been not with the team for since, I want to say, right after that preseason game that he played the first half of against the Red Bulls, but he's been posting Instagram photos from San Diego, so it was pretty obvious he wasn't in Columbus.
I bet. But, nice out there.
Yeah, he's with the new San Diego, I think it's San Diego Loyals?
Yeah, the Loyal.
Yeah,
FC.
Loyal. What? Okay, no S.
What kind of name is that?
Well, it's Landon Donovan's team. He's the coach and, like,
the owner?
President. He's not the owner.
Maybe plays every 20 minutes.
But he was involved.
Or so,
yeah. He's not playing.
He's coming out of retirement for the 8th time.
Yeah.
I actually heard an interview with him somewhat recently talking about, like, his role, and he's basically letting the two people he hired as assistant coaches, like, handle training, and he's just, like, putting his 2 cents in when he feels like he needs to. So good for him.
That's
pretty
awesome.
Good life. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the guy's doing that because he needs money.
I'll be at the beach. You guys figure
but,
it out.
But, no, he's at practice. But anyway, yeah, Kempen's going there. I think their first game is this week, if I remember correctly.
Second game. They played Eric Rinaldo at Las Vegas Lights on Saturday.
Did Kempen play?
No, he did not.
All right, well, that's not good because they sent him there to play, so hopefully he's able to work his way into the lineup because the crew obviously want him to get some minutes. And then Axel Schoberg, acquired obviously this offseason, signed former Colorado Rapids player who was waived. You know, he was an all-MLS defender at one point in his career, has battled injuries, fell out of favor. So, you know, a big physical defender. It's interesting with him because he's 28 years old. So for a defender, you think, you know, going on loan, you would assume that you would send a younger guy, but they want to keep Keita here. They want him working within the crew system and whatnot. But both of these guys have the rights to be called back if needed at any point this season. So this doesn't mean that we won't see either of them this year. I think actually you're probably better if you don't need to see them, because that means that guys are healthy and playing well. But hopefully these guys are both seeing minutes and, you know, can kind of progress as they go. But yeah, neither of them are young kids like you'd normally see on loan. So it's interesting.
Yeah, for Axel, it's, I mean, that's that's got to be a blow to the ego from the heights that his career has gone. But that's what injuries can do. But I think a guy like that needs to play somewhere, round into game shape, because the season is so dang long. Who knows whether we're going to need him or not. So, but I think it's fine. Real Salt Lake will be here for a 5 p.m. kick. 5 p.m. Let me make sure everybody knows that. It's Have we ever had a game start at 5? Probably, but I don't remember.
It's not
Sunday.
Common.
Sunday kickoffs are usually at 5.
Yeah, right? Well, yeah. That's true. But Saturday night, 5, as they continue to experiment with playing early games at different times because of the weather and the potential weather. Real Salt Lake brings in a familiar face, Justin Miram. And you guys say he did not have a very good match against Red Bulls the other night. Salt Lake tying with Red Bulls 1-1 in that one. I imagine he'll be in the starting 11 for this one.
I have this hunch that he's going to score. I just have.
It seems like a moment for him, you know, if there ever was one. He seems to kind of step up in moments. He's a narrative player, if you will.
And here's the thing with Justin. This has been the case his entire career. Is when Justin is happy, he plays so much better. And you know, I think you saw that when he was here under Greg, when they really had things rolling. I think you saw how he didn't fit, and he wasn't happy at the brief time in Orlando. He came back last year. It, again, wasn't great with Caleb. Goes to Atlanta, finds a role there. Was really happy in Atlanta, from everything I understand. Wanted to go back there. They just couldn't make it work financially. I don't know how happy he is based on watching him play on Saturday. You know, a lot of throwing his hands in the air. Yep. and stuff like that. And maybe that works out with more time. You know, he joined kind of late in preseason and whatnot. But you know, a disgruntled Justin Miram has not led to production. Now I'm sure he'll be motivated this weekend. I was trying to think, did he ever play back here with Atlanta? Because
no,
I know he didn't play in Columbus though, right? Yeah.
Played in the rain game number 1 in
the
USA.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he has been back here twice.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I still think he'll be motivated. You know, this is a Salt Lake team that could certainly use a win. I think they're two ties.
My only hunch for this game is it's either going to be really boring or an absolute thriller, because Salt Lake and Columbus, along with KC, are the only teams in the league so far only to concede a goal. The Crew are the only team yet to concede an open play after 180 minutes. So you could expect like a 1-0, a 1-1. But who knows? It's MLS. Could be 5-4.
Exactly.
Yeah. A name missing from the lineup for Salt Lake the other night was Beckerman. What do we know about his status?
I don't even know. It's an injury, but I don't remember what it is. But, you know, there was a lot of talk of whether or not he would even come back. In the offseason, he signed a little later in the offseason, so good for him. Been around for, 100 years now, something like
that. Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys that, like, how old is he now?
Was he 38, maybe?
Beckerman is dealing with a right lower body injury.
Which he can't be that old.
Is this hockey?
Lower body, wow.
He cannot be that old.
I think he is. Isn't he around?
I don't think he's that old.
I can't believe it.
I think he's like 30.
We got 37 years old.
37? Oh, you were close.
You've got to be kidding me.
Anyway,
he has crazy hair.
He's going to turn 38 in a month.
Wow.
I think all of his talent was in his dreadlocks, and when he cut his hair, it just, the wheels fell off.
All right, a change in goal for them as well. Speaking of the veterans, they had, what's-his-face?
Nick Raimondo.
Nick Raimondo for 125 years.
Yeah. Nick Raimondo, formerly of Miami Fusion.
This is true.
DC, Miami Fusion.
There you go. There you go. What do we think about their goal situation now?
Well, you know, now with Zach McMath's been one of those guys who's bounced around the league. He's always had some talent, but hasn't been able to kind of piece it together for a consistent period of time. You know, he got replaced in Philly, and then he was brought on to Colorado, and then they ended up bringing in Tim Howard. So, you know, if this
I hear that guy's good.
He's okay.
He's playing in Memphis now.
Yeah, Memphis, right.
Tim Howard is playing in Memphis?
Yep.
Great. Yeah, he's part owner of a team there.
Really?
Yeah.
USL? He just turned 41 the other day.
But, you know, Zach, I mean, this is his time to shine. I mean, he's been wanting to be the starter, the number one guy for, he's been in the league 8 or 9 years now at this point. So this is his time. And so we'll see how he does. But, you know, beyond that, you know, they have Justin Glad, a U.S. International who's got some time with the U.S., I should say. Who else? They have Rusnak.
Rusnak, yeah.
Absolutely terrific. Well, excuse me. Why are you yelling?
Eat my Slovak, man.
Eat your popcorn and relax.
So it's Rusnak?
Rusnak.
Rusnak, right. Okay.
Rusnak, great. Yeah, he's great. So they have really good talent. Corey Baird, a good young, speedy American player. So they have some talent, but, you know, we'll see. It seems like a lot of random pieces kind of thrown together on a roster. I don't know how, as a collective unit, how successful they're going to be this year.
And maybe they don't know that yet. So we'll
as we were talking earlier about MLS, no one knows.
No one knows anything.
Well, we're all gonna make our picks here in a moment. My did I say 3-2 for the Sounders game, crew?
You said something like that.
3-1.
That was completely
something.
Just off.
Give the college try, bro.
We're not going to Vegas.
FIFA
with my
was
picks.
Actually pretty close with the score line. You can check that out on MassReport.com.
Okay. Good. Sounds good.
Stealing from me.
Yeah, I got you.
Stealing from me.
No, he's learning from
me. I'm okay. Learning. I can yes. Deal
with
that.
All right. Let's head around the league. I want to start with, even though they're not in our conference, Minnesota. Are they for real or not?
Yeah.
They're scoring a lot of goals.
They're really good. I think them and KC have been the best two teams to start.
4-0 KC over Houston.
Yeah, and you got to watch that duo that they brought in, Alan Pulido, the Mexican striker, and the Israeli Gadi Kinda from Beitar Yerushalayim.
Okay.
Both of them have been fantastic to start, each scoring in both victories, KC beating Vancouver in week one, killing Houston on Saturday. So them and Minnesota have been the best. I think Minnesota, good win on the road at Portland in week one. And they were the first team since 2014 to score 4 first-half away goals in MLS. So making some history in week two.
Yeah, Minnesota's impressed me more than KC. I think KC's just played – I mean, maybe they will turn out to be good, but just played two bad teams. Or what I will – what I think will be bad teams.
Yeah.
But I say that, and we were talking before the podcast. I'm always so hesitant to really give my thoughts on teams this early. You know, even going into the summer, I feel like so much can change during that summer transfer window. And, you know, we've seen, you know, Seattle struggle for the first half of the year and then figure things out, make a run. The Crew have done the same thing. You know, you have your teams like Atlanta United and whatnot that you expect to be good. I imagine New York City FC will
bounce
figure
back.
Things out.
Only after, team without a goal.
Yeah, without, you know, two straight losses, but had to deal with CONCACAF Champions League and whatnot. So, you know, it's tough to make judgments right now, but I have been very impressed with what I saw from Minnesota.
You think the Galaxy will figure it out? Because they've not been impressive in
pressure,
their first two games.
I haven't pressure coming playing. To bear there.
They're
Chicharito, I've not seen play yet. Has anybody seen Chicharito play? Is he fitting in?
Not really. He's not really fitting in.
He's no Zlatan. He's no Zlatan.
He gets no service. I think that's the main problem. I think once he starts getting service, if they can figure out that whole situation, I think he'll be fine. But I think the team's just a dumpster fire right now.
LAFC draws with Philadelphia 3-3.
If you have not seen the goal by, what is it, Jacob Gillison?
Jacob Glesnes, I believe.
That is one of the – that might be the goal of the year by the time the season's done.
Yeah.
Glesnes, 40-yard free kick. Vela scoring his 50th goal on a curling free kick. It was the game of the week. Might be the game of the season.
By far, yeah. 3-3 goals back-to-back.
Oh, yeah. Philly blowing three leads. Yeah, no problem.
Very Philly of them.
Philly still suck, I'm convinced. Well, I think they suck.
I'm interested. So LAFC plays Miami at home that first game. And I thought Miami was you know, handled it very smartly, but last year LAFC was able to break down teams like that, and you know, especially a new team, I just expected they would end up, you know, 2-3-0 win type thing. And you know, then this week, you know, you give up 3 goals at home to Philly, you have to come from behind. You know, I'm interested to see what happens with LAFC. Obviously, you have that great run last year in the regular season. You know, can you sustain that 2 years in a row? It's not easy to do in MLS, and it's not like they have, you know, star power all over the field. I mean, they have some very good pieces, but you know, Vela's the guy they spent a whole bunch of money on. He's the name, and you know,
they have Diego Rossi.
Yeah, but I mean, these are guys that have kind of come into their own, you know, since coming there. And then I mentioned the summer transfer window. Do they lose a couple guys this summer? You know, obviously you can bring new guys in, but then you're trying to figure that out. So, you know, everyone expected this to be the favorite to win MLS Cup and win the Supporters' Shield and everything again. And now, you know, I think there are some questions. But again, it's early.
Well, also, and you know, they had a goalkeeper switch from last year. I think that's perhaps causing more problems. Because, again, as Ori mentioned earlier, I mean, the goalkeeping is critical for the communication side of things. So, you know, still trying to figure out the chemistry on the back line with the keeper.
And then also worth noting, Cincinnati's not been very good either.
Yeah, I was just going to bring them up. Shocking. They did score against Atlanta, but losing 2-1.
Yeah, nice strike by Kubo.
Do they have – I mean, I know it's going to be a while before Hell is Real returns, but how many losses are they going to have by the time we play them for the first time this year? Or how many wins? I guess that's an easy
question.
How many
wins? Let's see. They're going to be playing.
This is the season that cements their culture of leaving in the 50th minute, and I can't wait for it. They're just gonna set alarms for each other and be like, "Hey guys, it's the 50th minute. Oh, okay, see you next week." They are horrible, and I love it.
I think it's
almost like hiring a racist coach and having a player get charged with a felony is gracious. Not smart.
We should report live from the courthouse when Maddox makes his first appearance.
We were talking about live blogging in between segments. That's what we should record.
All of us should do the Mass Report from the courthouse.
Seth Tyler, he's coming back from Seattle.
We'll call it Massive
he's not,
Court.
He's stuck in Chicago. And Atlanta's another team that I think, especially with the injury to Joseph Martinez, could, you know, a team everyone thought was going to be really good, depending on how they replace a guy like that, because – you know, watching their game against Cincinnati, yes, they won, but it didn't look convincing.
No, they weren't, like, impressive or anything.
No, it wasn't the Atlanta. And Joseph Martinez, I mean, he solves so many offensive problems on his own, the runs he makes, things like that. But, you know, it'll be very interesting to see who they can bring in because, you know, Adam John, great.
He
DJ
played the
Williams.
Full 90.
Yeah.
Did J. Adam
Williams
John.
Is going to be the answer for Atlanta this year.
I've watched J.J. Williams a lot.
I know, me too.
And he's not the answer.
He's very lazy.
Well, obviously, they're going to be active in the transfer window. Yeah. They've got to solve this issue, or their fans are going to turn on them.
Right. Well,
look what they did in the offseason last year, or last season early, when they were trying to run their coach out of town.
Yeah, they didn't win in the first
two games. But Brian, impatient people.
They're still winning the attendance war. They got 69,000 and some odd in Atlanta.
Nice.
And
then compare that
amid
to
coronavirus scares. So yeah. Nice.
Seattle was, I think, 7,000 less people compared to week one.
I really feel like we're about 3 weeks away from Don Garber shaming cities for not showing up for games due to the coronavirus. Like, I feel like that's something that's going to happen. Well, if they loved their team, they would just, you know, tough it out. It's just
the
coronavirus.
Austin will survive coronavirus, and you can go watch soccer games in Austin.
It's something that's going to happen, and I'm honestly, I feel like that's going to be, like, the pinnacle of Don Garber. We're going to look back on and be like, remember
Austin survives the coronavirus because they're built on a freaking nuclear waste site.
That's right.
There it's also hot down there.
Who are you again?
Doesn't the heat kill the...
Welcome to the show.
That's what I heard. All right. Any other thoughts around the league before we wrap this thing up with our picks for Saturday?
I just want to put it out there that I think Minnesota's got probably the best kit in the league right now. But, hey, that's just me. I'll put it on the table if anybody wants to pick that up.
Yeah, go ahead. All the kits suck. That's my take. They're all bad this year.
I wouldn't say all bad.
I like
a couple.
Our black. Yeah. Our all black has always been my favorite. I wish it's a little tough in July. But
if we could cycle back to Chicharito for a second, he absolutely got worked by the Houston defense. There's a great photo out there of one of the Houston defenders having Chicharito in a headlock, and it's actually on the Dynamo website where they were saying because his quote was that he's starting this phase of his retirement and everything, and talking about the physicality that we were talking about in the first segment. You know, Chicharito is in this headlock and he's just struggling, and the caption was, "Retirement's working out really well for you, isn't it?" So, that's pretty fun if anybody wants a good laugh about
it. I also wanted to throw out the – I felt it was a kit clash this weekend between Columbus and Seattle.
Oh, my God.
I agree.
Why would you have bright yellow with bright green? They're, by the way, that green matches the turf at CenturyLink.
Right.
They're, like, invisible. It's like a green screen. Like, I just don't understand. And then the crew are still wearing black at home, obviously, and that's a whole thing. But, God, Saturday was a nightmare with the yellow and the green.
They should have brought out the pennies. That's what we used to do in youth soccer. Right. Oh, we got matching jerseys.
Hey, Ralph. Merrim did not play in the crew game in Columbus.
Ooh.
He did play in the Open Cup game, though, so he has played back here.
What was that? I'm sorry?
Merrim didn't play here last year.
Was he on the bench?
He played in the Open Cup game, though. So you got one. One out
there
of two.
There you go. He did not play 50%. In the rain game.
That's all right.
Is there a chance of rain on Saturday?
Yes.
There is.
Uh-oh.
The first time Ralph's been wrong since 5 minutes ago when he said Nagby was better than Trav.
All right, chance of showers on Saturday.
Boy. I will fight that.
For the 5 o'clock kickoff, let's go around the room and make our picks and then get out of here, Patrick. Give me a score.
Oh, there is rain for Saturday. That's unfortunate. I think the Crew win 2-0. I think I do agree with Ori. I think Salt Lake, I only watched this past week's game, but I think they do have a good defense. I think the Crew, though, have played two good defensive teams already, and I think this is the week where you start to see them kind of figure some things out offensively, create some more chances, be more dangerous, and you know, get more than one goal.
I'm going to go 1-1. I think...
Hater.
Hey, you know, I'm just giving you my best guess. Salt Lake's going to bring a good onslaught of scoring opportunities, but I think especially with the Crew, if they get Vito back, going to be able to handle that, more of the bend-don't-break kind of stuff. And I'm just not certain that the offense is going to click just yet for the Crew, but I think they'll get one in.
All right. Yeah, Alex?
I think Ralph is
going to make a prediction. You got the mic, yeah. Then you don't have it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Like an umpire right now.
Thank you. I didn't want to yell because Sam's going to – the audio levels would spike and Sam would be angry. And I don't like when Sam's angry. It freaks me out a little bit. But he's shooting me a dirty look. This is making great radio right now. But you know, it's a little interesting because it seems like RSL is at a crossroads right now since Petke departed. And, you know, speaking of racist coaches.
Yeah, I forgot about that whole thing.
But, you know, since Petke departed. So it's kind of. It's,
what if Cincy hired Petke?
Oh, no. Sounds like a good move.
That's a just Netflix series. My mind. That's a Netflix series right there. But, you know, with he actually, it's stranger things have happened. But, anyway,
well, if they don't do a background check.
But speaking of Petke, that press conference from a couple years ago with the printer, you know, Troy, get the printer, get the papers. Or
all right, give me a pick, Ralph.
But anyway, sorry. Thanks, guys. You guys always keep me in line. I'm glad you're back, Brian. It's nice to see you.
It's good to see you too, Ralph. Make a pick.
But anyway. So,
for the love of God, as make I, a pick.
Just say two numbers.
As I was
one
saying,
number, then another number.
I'm trying to make a pick, and you guys are getting off kilter here.
Ralph, will you pick?
Gonna skip you.
So anyway, I said, like I was saying before, I was so rudely interrupted. Hold on.
Right,
go ahead.
I'm going with nil-nil. Next
nil,
pick.
Nil,
Ori,
nil.
Go.
While Ralph is plugging in, I'll also say nil-nil. Nil. I think nil, it's going to be a snore.
It's going to be a
nil,
boring,
nil.
Horrible game.
It's
going to
be rainy. The game's going to have nothing happen. Nil-nil.
What?
What?
All right, Ralph.
What do you think Bart would have picked?
Bart would have
3-0 Crew.
3-0 at Josh Williams hat trick. Yeah, and it would have been nil-nil.
Okay, Ralph.
I would like to motion that we have a master report after dark and ask why Alex hates Caleb Porter. Can we, I'd like to make a motion for that.
That doesn't need to be an after dark.
Yeah, I've been pretty clear about
that.
I got
to go home. I got to.
But
get
anyway, yeah, Brian's got a life. I don't. So anyway, I think RSL's at a crossroads a little bit. They've got great talent, I think, especially with what Mike said with Baird. Roosnock's very good. Miram probably will come alive because he always seems to have an axe to grind against Columbus.
Puff of smoke is going to come out of the Vatican.
Especially with, you know, some documented issues and stuff like that. That, you know, he just had a less than, it seemed, amicable exit from Columbus. But regardless, I'm going to say 2-0 Crew. Everybody's going to breathe a sigh of relief now because I'm done talking.
Get out of here. Ralph, have you ever thought about a run up for Congress?
Good filibuster.
And now the congressman from the great state of Ohio.
I would do a lot better than a lot of the candidates that are running right now in this present race.
All right, I'm going to be. I'm going to say 2-1 Crew. Miram will score for Real Salt Lake. It's just that's just how he rolls. He will score, but. We'll get two, and Vito is going to score on a corner kick on a header.
You said that last week, so hopefully it's
doubling down
time.
On it. All right. Well, he didn't play, did he?
No, he
so
did not.
Go right back
count.
To
he also didn't score.
That's true.
He could have.
Brian, you didn't talk long enough about your pick. Do you want to talk more?
No, I'm done. I'm done. We're all done. The master report is over. Thank you, Sam. Sam will tell us how long we talked. We were at an hour, and then, you know, it's an hour and a half.
Or do we just not talk about Bart when he's not here?
Oh, the bag. Can anyone talk about the bag? Bart
GCG
doesn't show
bag,
up
some
anymore.
Sort of lifestyle something.
Not
rather.
Failing.
Not failing. They are a sponsor for the Massive Airport thing. It's
well,
a
maybe
thing.
Bart
yeah,
could
cool.
show up.
Go to GCGbag.com. And I, you know what? I got to say, I have found so many people that have an obsession with the Golden Girls. And every time I show them a GCG bag scarf, they're like, oh my gosh, I love this. So I'm sending people your way.
Right before the game this week, they had on the TV broadcast, they had like a woman holding a GCG bag scarf, an attractive blonde woman, who none of the GCG bags that I was watching the game with knew.
Is Mrs. Murphy going to be okay with you talking about another attractive blonde woman?
I don't. My mother doesn't listen to me.
No.
There we go.
So that's
the response of dreams. Just like when Caleb was like, Seattle forwards don't defend.
Stuff.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's good for us for getting
there
first, right?
All right, Mike, Patrick, Ori, Alex, Ralph, Sam, thank you for making it all happen. My name is Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD125, if you get a chance. I'd appreciate it. And, of course, we'll be back here next week, Point Tavern, for another edition of the Massive Report Podcast. Thanks for listening.